Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Anika Zubair, and welcome back to the next episode of the Customer Success Channel podcast, brought to you by PlanHat, the modern customer platform. This podcast is created for anyone working in or interested in the customer success field. On this podcast, we will speak to leaders in the industry about their experiences and their definitions of customer success and get their advice and best practices on how to run a CS organization. Jan Young needs no introduction as she is top 25 and top 50 CS influencer, top 50 women leaders in customer success, and top 100 CS strategist. Jan is a principal consultant at the Success League, and she specializes in helping heads of CS become VPs and get a seat at that elusive executive table. In today's podcast, we are going to be chatting with Jan about the hottest topic in customer success in 2023, AI. And its effects on customer success. ChatGPT has taken the world by storm, and what new world lies ahead for us with this new technology of artificial intelligence in SaaS and customer success? Welcome, Jan, to the podcast. I am so very excited to finally have you on here with us today. I know you well. You're a name that I would be very surprised if our listeners didn't know already. But for the benefit of anyone who doesn't know you, can you please tell us a little bit more about yourself and what it is you're doing and how you're working in the customer success space?
Yeah, sure. I love technology. I love customer success. I love trying to help people, you know, improve themselves and the profession. And so I think that, you know, when I was an individual contributor, I really approached it from that. You know, I wasn't even called a CSM. I was called, it was sort of in the sales account management role, but we already brought in all of the major companies. And so from the very beginning, I was post sales. And I've always thought about the customer. I've always thought about that intersection between the customer and the company. So anything I can do to learn from others or to read or to, you know, think and you know, kind of come up with new approaches, like that's what I want to do. And so I guess at the core, you can call me a geek and otherwise, you know, you can call me a consultant or a coach or, you know, other things like that too.
I think that the Success League should rebrand your title as
Principal Geek. Great
title. Yeah, I think we could all aspire to that. But tell us a little bit more about the Success League and everything else that you're doing there and how you're helping different CS leaders and also organizations learn more about customer success?
Yeah, sure. So the Success League is a boutique customer success consultancy that has certifications for CSMs and CS leaders. The one for CS leaders is really actually very unique. It's 15 courses, all sort of like takeaways and things like that, that are specific to being a CS leader. That's a big part of why I joined. I've been a solopreneur consultant actually, though, since 2016, and been working with founders to help them think through their whole go-to-market motion. And so focusing on the post-sales motion is something I've been doing for the last couple of years. I've also done some interim VP of CS roles as part of that, a lot of coaching, workshops and consulting as well. So it's really, you know, a lot of different opportunities as I've been working with Success League. And then I'm also always sort of thinking about how to build communities. So I've built out CS office hours, starting something in Southern California, SoCal CX right now. So there's projects that I do on my own and projects that I do with Success League. And it's just, that's another thing, I guess, besides being a geek, if there's a way to create a community, that I usually find it. Like, I will create a community at the drop of a hat. So
I love that. And it's so true to your core though, Jen. I love how you're being open and honest with us, because I just think of the community that you run for CS leaders as well. And I just think, yeah, Jan's always involved in any way that she can be, which is amazing. And I love that.
I can't help it. It's addictive. I really can't help it.
That's so great to hear. Honestly, it's so great to hear. And I think the community and customer success is a big part of how the entire industry has been shaped, is around a lot of everyone supporting each other as we navigate and figure out what the heck customer success means at every different organization. That being said, you've had quite a stint in customer success. What inspired you to actually work in CS rather than going in a different direction with your career?
Interestingly enough, so I wasn't even going to be in business. I broke up with a boyfriend in college because he was going to be a business major, and I knew we had nothing in common, right? You know, I was going to be either a poet or a playwright or, you know, this sort of thing. But turns out because I was not independently wealthy, I needed a day job. And because I'd always organized people and things and budgets and all those things, I was a project manager. And this is before you really had to have a PMP and everything. So it was a way of getting into tech. And so that's how I got into tech, was project management. And then I went to business school because I wanted to combine my love for the arts and how film and just content that represented our communities, our diverse communities, would be more possible as online content became more possible, on-demand content. And so the way I connected the two was really, I was so focused. I went to business school, ironically, in the end.
I'm loving where this story's going, by the way.
I was so focused on demand content that that's all I ever talked about. I do get a little obsessive about things. That's all I ever talked about, to the point where in business school, I was nicknamed by someone as Jan on Demand.
Yeah, that's great. I'm expecting the next piece of your content or anything else you're publishing is called Jan on Demand. And now that you've told me that you also were like an inspiring poet, I'm expecting like CS poetry.
Another haiku or something. Well, luckily ChatGPT is around, so I don't have to write the haikus myself. But So then I went to business school. I ended up getting a job out at Paramount, which is how I ended up living in Los Angeles, of all places. I'm originally from NoCal. I was never going to live in SoCal. I moved to New York to not live in SoCal. I still have my 917 number. Like, I was really, I mean, I was diehard New York. I became a New Yorkophile when I was there. And I used to make fun of them before I lived there. And so, like, I was never going to leave New York. I moved to LA to work at Paramount, kept my cell number, was going to move back. But then, you know, once you're here, you know, like, you're here. And so you have a community you build up. There's jobs that you do. And I found, I did marketing. And I really appreciate marketing, but I also hate it for myself as a job. Like, I just don't care. And so after bringing ads to Video On Demand, another story, which, you know, I hate ads, but I knew that folks needed to monetize. So, like, there were a lot of projects to do, and it was very exciting at the time. And then all the consolidation of entertainment tech and entertainment generally, just then that became sad and boring, and I needed to leave it. Anybody thinks that Hollywood is glamorous, there's no glamour actually here. That's all manufactured.
It's actually quite ugly. And I think it's really sad, like, as a SoCal, ex-SoCal resident, born and raised. But I just think that everyone glamorizes Hollywood so much. And it's actually quite ugly. Like, every single time you visit it, I'm like, it's not that great, guys. I think that, like, the glitz with me, there's trash everywhere. The Walk of Fame is really underwhelming. And, like, you really don't see celebrities everywhere, no matter how much people think they see.
Everybody's in their cars, or they're off in the hills, or
like behind security or something. Like, you're never going to see them. So,
no, you see a lot more celebrities in New York than you see in LA. But anyway, so all of that, and I never cared about that stuff anyway. I'm not a name dropper. I do not care about dropping names. So I gravitated to being the geek behind all of that stuff. But even still, the way that the industry was changing, I wanted something new and different. So that's how I got into emerging tech and really consulting around that. I was really focused on blockchain. But again, then with all the crypto stuff, I also don't care about the whole get rich quick schemes. And there's an element to that. So I wasn't so focused on blockchain. I was, and I tried to diversify blockchain. Actually, I organized a conference and some other things around that. I want to diversify tech just generally. But anyway, that said, really got into then, you know, AI, IoT. If I had more science in my background, I would do more like quantum computing. I was really focused on blockchain. I was trying to diversify blockchain, right? To ensure, because you need a diversity of people in any sort of tech in order to build the type of tools that really will benefit the communities and basically just how we all use it. If you like, Silicon Valley was really was an amazing place when everybody was there because of the way that everybody could focus and really just kind of go leaps and bounds in terms of the profession. But and now some of that is sort of when everybody's dispersed, that's gone away, right? But at the same time, you still got a lot of groupthink, and you got to get away from that groupthink. You know, you need to have diversified people in tech, because otherwise the types of solutions you come up with are only for like a singular focus type of thing. We don't need another productivity tool. We really don't.
Yeah, but also then your market becomes way too saturated with the same buyer if you're only building tools and products for the same people. And I want to actually dive a little bit deeper into a few things that you've said. You've already gotten me excited about our topic already. You've already mentioned just ChatGPT, which is a big part of what we're talking about, and AI, I think machine learning. There's just, everything seems to be all the buzz right now. And the geek in you, I'm sure, is going to keep correcting me and adding to this conversation, which I'm excited to, but it is all the buzz right now. I cannot open any website or anything without someone talking about AI and ChatGPT. And that is what we're here to talk about today. And can you, in your own words and the geek gen that you've just expressed to us, tell us what you're seeing right now happening in the CS world when it comes to AI and customer success?
Well, I'm seeing a lot of hype is what I'm seeing. Yeah. Okay. So what happens in the same way that back, you know, with crypto, there was, you know, everybody was like, you know, back in 2017, all wanted to like buy anything, you know, or go back to even the early 2000s. All people had to do was add .com to the end of their name and boom, they were a $1 billion company, didn't even have a business model, right? So there's a lot of hype in tech. And right now the hype is ChatGPT, but why is that? Now, first of all, AI has been around for a while. As long as you've been saying Siri, or in our household, we say G, and I can't say it out loud because everything will
start binging at you. Yeah. And I can't say the A word in my household because everything will exactly. start binging at me.
right. So that's natural language processing, right? When my autocorrect, which is, I always joke, is never correct, is putting in dinner instead of the word sum. I don't know why it does that, but it does that all the time. But anyway, so when these things happen, that's all AI, right?
It's around us all the time. It really is. And I think we're forgetting that. And like you just said, it's being hyped up right now in tech, which I think will transform the way we do things, which we'll get into. But it's just crazy how something that's been around, like you said, for a while is, I don't want to say it's scaremongering, but it is in some ways, because everyone's like saying it's going to replace our jobs and so on. And I just think that there's a lot more to it, but the hype is real.
So the hype is real. And sure, some of the scaremongering. Okay, so there's a lot of different things and a lot of different types of AI. So the difference first between AI and machine learning. Machine learning is where the computer will look at patterns across a large, large amount of data and then say, here's some patterns I see. And then you do some things with those patterns, right? So that's machine learning. AI is when you're writing the code and you're saying, if these parameters are met, then do X. It's like any other type of code kind of thing in some ways. But then there's, you know, whatever, neural processing and things like that. But anyway, I won't get into all of the geekiness of that. And I'm not an expert in it. I am very much a generalist in lots of things. And this is another thing I'm a generalist about. But all that to be said, then there's these different types of AI that we already have integrated into our lives. So first of all, just understand, AI has been here. It's not like ChatGPT came and now AI's here. What's different about ChatGPT is that it's working so well, frankly. And that's because they have a very large model. They took all of the internet up until 2021 and they trained it off of that, right? So all of a sudden now it has a lot of information and it's like, oh yeah, that's pretty good. The problem is, and this is what they call hallucinations or something, but basically the problem is when ChatGPT doesn't know something, it'll just sort of smooth over it. You know, like you or I might, you know, when we're like, oh, I don't really know, but I think it's this. I'm just going to say it's this. Well, that's what ChatGPT is doing too. The problem is also Like they have been able to train it to some degree, but then what you saw, what Microsoft Bing, what they were doing, and there was something in the news about like how, you know, a reporter was like, oh, you know, it said that I should leave my wife and that it had this alter ego name and all these things, right? Yeah, I don't know if you read any of that. Anyway, so like you can, if they don't have guardrails on it, right, then what happens is it will, it doesn't know that it's gone to someplace that would be weird, you know, like, and so you do have to have guardrails on it because otherwise it's just going to execute, you know, like if you had a program where technically it could hit the nuclear button, if certain things steps went through, then it wouldn't, it doesn't know, it, you know, it's a computer program. It's not a person, right? So if the logical next step is to hit the nuclear button, well, then it would just do that. I'm not saying that it's set up to do that at all. I'm just saying that like, if there was something dangerous for it to do, it doesn't, if you don't give it the guardrails, it doesn't know that that's dangerous per se.
For sure. And I think that that's where people are missing the AI bit of all of this is like, we still control it for now. I know there's lots of talk about it being smarter than humans and taking over certain things and the ways we do and how it'll grow and learn and be a powerful beast. But I think there is still the human element to everything we do. Like we were just talking about in our households or IoTs, until we prompt them, they're not going to do things that we tell it not to do, basically. So I think it's going to be very, very interesting to see how this transforms customer success, which is what we're here to talk about today, actually. And I'm so curious, as someone who's consulting and working with multiple businesses and involved in customer success in the way you are, what are some of the ways you think AI is going to start to really transform how we do customer success?
Well, and we can kind of go into it from the from that. One of the things you just mentioned there is AI smarter than us? And what AI is able to do is like for us and our brains are amazing, right? Like our natural language processing that we do without even thinking, you know, without thinking about it, just reacting in our brains is still more advanced than what you can see, you know, it can be done in AI. But what AI is better at is comprehending mass amounts of data. That it becomes overwhelming for us, right? So when you think about in these businesses that we're in, these tech businesses, and just how much data that we have at our, available to us, all of the phone calls we do, all of the Zoom calls, all of the emails, all of the ways in which our customers are using the product when they're logging in, who's logging in, you know, on what type of device, what pages do they go to, what, you know, what, where do they get stuck? What are they doing? All of these kinds of things. How are they achieving their goals, et cetera? All these data points, right? Now that's too much for us to take in. So what do we do with our health scores? We say, well, the last time I talked to Joe, Joe was really happy. He just came back from vacation. Things were good. Okay, this account is green. Joe is happy. Well, that's really too simplistic. You know, the fact that Joe just came back from vacation does not make that a green account, right? What really makes it a green account is what's happening. You know, are you multi-threaded? Do you have more than one contact at that company, or is it only Joe? What kinds of conversations are happening across that organization with your organization, across your whole organization? How does that bubble up? What does that mean? You know, like where are your, if we should be thinking strategically about these accounts. If you are a strategic customer success manager or a strategic consultant, you want to think about, you know, across all of these different ways. Are they using the product the way they should? Are they meeting their goals the way they should? You know, all of these things, the way that we would expect by someone who has been using our product for 1 year. And by knowing what all of the other customers are doing, you know, similar to this type of customer at the 1 year point, right? Like what, where they should be in their customer journey, all of those things. Like all of these things, ideally, we would be incorporating into a customer health score, right? But we can't, you know, because how complicated is that, right?
Yeah, no, I think that you're bringing up something really great, which is the data, which is so critical to everything that we do day to day in customer success. Like you said, it's so much more than just an email that Joe just sent or a phone call that you had. There is so much more in the product usage and the feature usage in what's happening and what we expect him to be doing in, let's say, the 1 year or 2 year mark of using the product. So I do think data mixed with AI is what's going to really transform customer success. And I think that that's what you're leading to as well. But there's still a lot of fear, I'd say, out there around it taking a CSM's job away. Do you agree? Like, do you think that it's going to? Do you think it's going to change the CSM job? What do you think about that?
Well, I would say think about anything you're doing that is repetitive, that doesn't require someone to think, that doesn't require critical thinking skills. Anything like that is, you think about what robots do in warehouses, you know, or, you know, that sort of thing, versus when you have humans doing it, they're getting carpal tunnel and things like that, right? So like there are things you want robots to do instead of people because it actually damages us physically or mentally by doing these repetitive things. You think about, you know, if you were in, automotive, you know, where they're putting, you know, cars together and stuff like that. You know, machines were replacing people in those circumstances because they're more effective. You know, they can carry big, heavy items and put them together with greater precision than someone who maybe they're tired from the night before and they forget to put that one bolt on or something like that, right? Machines can do those things, right? So when you think about, should I use ChatGPT to help me come up with or really any sort of process that you might, not just ChatGPT, but any of these tools that can help you come up with better marketing campaigns to your customers to send them the right message at the right time to the right person with the right type of information where you can personalize it to that person. Yeah, why not? And then you can make the small changes to it. Like, you know, how was Tahiti? Because I wish we were all coming back from Tahiti, right? So like any of those things that can make you work more efficiently, then great. Have it do those things, right? Because ultimately what you need to be doing is thinking more strategically. If you are not bringing a better strategy to this based upon what you know in terms of the humans you're working with and all of the data that you can analyze, then you are replaceable. Right. We all, and that's not just a CSM. That's in any type of role that we have. You know, now you see at the grocery store, you know, Amazon is doing stores where you can walk out without going to the register, you know? So yes, you know, anything that is a repetitive thing that otherwise, you know, that's why you have self-checkout, like anything that is repetitive that you could do yourself, then yes, that you can do without a machine instead of someone else doing it. Like you should expect that we all need to step up, that we all need to be more strategic, that we all need to be thinking critically about what we bring to the table. Because anything that is a repetitive motion, you should expect that at some point that repetitive motion, if it's not something uniquely human, then it is something that sure could be figured out by a computer.
Definitely. And I think that that's what's going to transform our entire industry and the role of customer success manager or leader, whatever your role is in CS or any role in the business, is that change that ChatGPT or AI brings to that repetitive motion that you're just saying. It's you're able to take time to actually strategically think rather than do those motions. I'm just thinking even a few years ago when I was building out a CS team and within a CS tool and the templates that we were building, all of the email templates, if a customer is ghosting you, if it's time for renewal, if it's time for an upsell conversation, any of the triggers we were creating based on health scores, all of that had to be created. Some sort of language around that was from my CSMs and repeating that. And I'm just thinking, even before we had CS tools out there that we do, which I'm glad we do, back when I did CS in the early days, we had spreadsheets and just manual emails and like hopes and prayers that we were like, okay, we have the right data at hand, but there's just so much that takes away from that now. And we have that ability to be strategic because, hey, we don't have to sit there and write follow-up emails or look back at our notes from a call or decide what the health score is based on our feeling because there's actually data now behind that powered with AI that's going to be able to really help. So I completely agree on that. And I totally think that it's going to change the jobs, like you said, but I don't think it's going to take anything away.
No, it should enable us to be better, frankly. And we should want to lift ourselves, lift the profession, lift our companies. The other thing too, I think, is it's really going to enable our jobs to be easier in many ways. Like, there's a lot of companies, they're using it to do the integrations, right? So those back-end integrations that are real pain in the, you know, derriere to, when you're trying to figure out which object in Salesforce, or if you have like a custom field and all those kinds of things, like basically they're already starting to use natural language processing, where you basically say, I want to connect, you know, these fields. And then it's smart enough to figure out how to do that and to set it up for you, right?
What an operational like nightmare if you didn't have that already. Like, that's so much help already just there, what you're just saying.
Right. And so there's things like that. Or when you think about training, now that we're on Zoom so much, there are ways in which, you know, it can identify sort of what emotions are being communicated and how you're expressing yourself, right? So now you can, there are programs out there that are available literally right now that are available that you can use, and then it can be used as a training tool. So instead of somehow as a manager, you're going to listen to every gong call in the universe, which you don't have time for, you're not going to do. As a CSM, you can train yourself. You can get feedback from the AI about how you might do it better. And then if you want to talk about it with your manager, you can either say, these are the ways I've improved, or you can say, hey, what do you think about this? The AI is suggesting I do this. I'm not sure. It seems like I should do this other approach. Discuss it with your manager. You know what I mean? Because AI isn't always perfect and isn't always going to come up with, you know, the only solution for something. There will still be things to discuss, but now you have a point in time and a part of a video to then show your manager and discuss with them. And you can be proactive as a CSM, bringing that up to your manager even. Right. I mean, it empowers people to do things differently to take that next step. There's also other problems, but there's also a lot of ways in which it can empower us.
Yeah. And I remember when I was a CSM too, and like how many summary notes I had to take. And even if I wanted to share something on Slack or Teams, I would have to go back and look at my notes and then share it to the wider product team. And like, now you can highlight it and record it, like you said, and just share it off in that way. And it just makes your life so much easier. And you just shared a number of things that how different companies are doing different things with AI. And as a consultant, you are working with quite a few companies. And I'm wondering, is there anything really cool or different that you've seen companies use AI in customer success? You mentioned the operations integrations piece. Is there anything else that a company or anything that you've heard has been done that's really unique? Because I'm hearing a lot about the emails. I'm hearing a lot about the like uplift and like automation. But is there anything kind of unique out there right now with AI and CS?
What I think is happening is everyone's trying to be unique right now. So there, you have one company that's focusing on the back end integration, making that simple. You have another one that's saying, hey, we can give you a better customer health score and suggest next steps and segmentation and all these things because we can analyze your data. We can, you know, another one is saying we can train your CSMs because, you know, we can, you know, show you what's happening emotionally and help you be smarter in terms of your EQ. You know, you have, there are others that are saying, here are the highlights from your meeting, and this is where things could be at risk. These are how you should organize your next steps. Here are some ways to follow up via email with your customer, right? So there's all these different ways in which every company is trying to be unique right now. But in the end, what's going to happen is all of that is going to be table stakes. They'll need to integrate all of those things, all of it.
And I think it's going to affect all AI and ChatGPT, whatever, everything within it. And machine learning is going to affect the entire organization, not just customer success. But, you know, we want to talk about what's happening in the CS world on this podcast. But I think that it'll be interesting to see what's going to happen in 3-5 years of how businesses are run and the efficiencies, I would say, around business in general, not just in customer success. But as you said, it's going to free up time for us to be more strategic, which I think is what really is the focus right now. But I think another thing that's relevant to talk about right now, as we are in this economic slump. I'll say it as that. And the tech world is trying to figure out and manage what's next when it comes to customer retention, possible churn, you know, just managing expectations in that way. Do you think AI will help with customer retention and churn? Will it help mitigate churn? What are your thoughts around that and how that might help?
Yeah, I mean, so if you understand what's happening with your customer, first of all, you can be more strategic with your customer. If you understand where customer friction is taking place within your own product, where they are stalling, you know, and where they are churning so that you can then go in and fix it and remove that customer friction, which is oftentimes with your product, sometimes with your training, all of those things can be more easily and more quickly identified when you start to have ways to, well, first of all, you have to start gathering that data. You have to start tracking just how long does it take any of our customers to get from point A to point B. And it can be small points, you know, just like, do they, you know, take care of the integrations? You know, do they provide the information they need to from their company? Is there some way that, you know, the heavy lift of all the data they need to gather from internally, is there a way we can make that lift easier? You know, depending upon your product and your customer base, what sort of challenges you might have, you want to take a look at all of those things that are happening. You know, in the same way that we've taken this microscope to the pre-sales process and we've looked at marketing and sales, you know, ad nauseum, we need to start applying those same lessons and the same sort of tools to the post-sales process. Because otherwise, without that, you don't have land and expand. You just have land. And then that's a lot of extra cost because they never expanded. They never, you know, renewed. And so you really have a lot of sunk costs without the revenue, right? So the whole point is the expand. We need to start focusing on how to make that a smoother process for our products, how that can be smoother with that, for our processes, how that can be smoother, and, you know, and for relationship building as well. But the other thing that's kind of interesting too, and I haven't read the book yet, but I'm so intrigued, but basically there's this sense that with AI, with all of the processes that can be automated and improved upon, they actually, by 2030, there's a prediction out there that 20% of the customers will be machines. And so if you think about that, that's kind of weird, right? To even think of it that way. But if you think about it, if you have a self-driving car and the self-driving car needs to, it won't be getting gas, but it will be maybe getting charged electrically or something like that, right? And all of these different kinds of things, then like if you had solar panels that were charging, you know, batteries, and these self-charging cars are going to go by and get charged or maybe whatever, who knows how it'll happen, but, you know, eventually, not maybe not by 2030, but eventually, like all of these different ways in which then the machine becomes a customer to the machine, which be, you know, eventually there's humans in there, but there are also machines that are all part of that ecosystem as well. So if you think that procurement is rough and you feel like you're being commoditized by procurement, well, then your machine is going to go with whatever's the most efficient. And that's an interesting way in which that marketplace sort of pans out and will develop as well. There's also, I mean, there, already like on Amazon, there was one of those stories about like a futuristic story where there's a factory that still makes some sort of product and they have drones that are protecting it and stuff like that. Like it's just its own little ecosystem kind of thing, right? And the people are over on the side and they're not using the product at all. Like they're two separate sort of ecosystems. So that's kind of a weird future. But I don't know. I think we can avoid going there because we can imagine it, you know, going there. I think we can avoid some sort of dystopian future if we want to. But I do think that even if by 2030, if machines are going to be part of our customers, then how does that work? You know, and how, as if you're looking at that customer experience all the way from marketing and, you know, sales and, you know, delivery, right, all the way through, then if machines are part of that customer base, what does that mean for your business and how do you provide those services? Anyway, I don't know yet. I haven't read that book yet to start to imagine it, but I do think that already there are things that I can imagine. And I think that it's time to start thinking a little differently about how we participate in it, how we create guardrails for it, but also how we take advantage of it. And it's so important to get engaged in emerging technology when it's emerging, right? If we had back in the 1990s said, I don't want to be a part of that scary interweb thing, you know, and what does that WWW stand for anyway? Like, you would be missing out on everything.
No, I completely agree. I also just think of like everything that I do today that's non like traditional and is in emerging tech, which is now normal tech, by the way. For example, I don't actually carry any credit cards with me or any cash.
Oh, really?
I tap my phone everywhere I go. I know that not a lot of places in the world do that, but in London, like fintech has been around. It's something a lot of our banks here are neo banks, which means that they don't actually even have physical branches. I know America is really backwards on this and there's still checks, but we don't have that. And like everything we do is like either bank transfer or we tap our phones. And that was emerging tech a few years ago. In some parts of the world, it is still emerging tech, but I couldn't imagine a world where I'm like, oh, I have to actually use my credit card and take out a physical card, because no, I use my phone everywhere I go now because of Apple Pay. And so I just think that that's something I hopped on. But like you're saying, no one should be fearing what ChatGPT should be bringing into the customer success world or the business world as a whole. I think it'll help tremendously with retention and the data points that we just talked about. I think it'll help with mitigating churn depending on your data that you just said. And I think that it'll change our jobs for the positive and give us that strategic outlook that we are so desperately craving because we're just doing so much admin. I remember as a CSM, I would block out half days just for admin. And there's just so much positivity around it. And I think there's a lot of people who are fearful of it, which is fine. Change is hard. Change brings fear. Do you think that in your opinion, we've talked a lot about the positives. Is there any negatives the AI will have in like AI will have in CS world or anything that you think that might take away from what we know as CS today?
Yeah, but that's why I'm so passionate about diversifying tech. One of the things you see is, you know, the facial recognition. Now I think it's a little better, but there was a whole period of time that basically if you had dark skin, didn't even like, it couldn't figure out if you were male or female. Like it just like didn't have a way of dealing with it because all of the images that it was trained on were lighter skinned people, right? So there's that. If you have short hair versus long hair, you know, and now there are men and women who have both, you know, one or the other, both, whatever. And so like that is something that sometimes it can get confused by, right? And so why is that? It's because of the humans that are most likely in tech and doing the coding, you know, didn't think about that. Didn't think about how they needed to train the models on these different things. They thought it was fine. You know, the same sort of thing with, you know, the types of products that are get funded, right? The reason why we need to diversify, you know, the investor class is because, you know, what they can imagine. You know, same reason why I was interested in entertainment being diversified and how it was distributed being diversified, because we didn't used to always have stories that were as diverse, you know. Think about when Orange is the New Black, when that came out, right? Like that was way different, you know, but that's because those stories hadn't been told before, right? And so there's a lot of things that do need to be thought about and modified, but only if we diversify who is in tech will we even think to ask those questions. You know, you also see how if there are countries and governments that, you know, can use like facial recognition tech, which is part of AI, to, you know, keep people separated and in a way and things like, you know, like I'm not going to get into specifics, but we already know from in the news all the things that can happen with that. And that's, you know, when it's not used for good, right? So when you're looking at how it can be applied to business, sure, there are probably ways, you know, we could use it for something that isn't for good, but that's also then why we should be supporting tech for good, you know, and trying to educate ourselves about it. As if you're scared of it, if you put your head in the sand you know, then you would never have had a camera on your phone. You would still just be using a phone. And I don't even know if you'd have a phone that would text. You know what I mean? Like think about it. Like you think about what we use our phones for now, you know, even. And so like, there's no real point in putting your head in the sand. Be educated, participate, contribute. If you don't like what direction it's going in, change it. Move it towards good.
We have the narrative at this point to control because we are using the tool. The tool is not using us. At the end of the day, we are inputting data. We are inputting our questions into ChatGPT, or we're recording things that we choose to record. It's not forcing us to. We are choosing to do those things. And what we do with all that data and how we ask it to slice and dice it, that is still in our control. So I don't think you're right. We shouldn't put our head in the sand and fear it.
What we should do, though, is we need to request it, like the laws, like in Europe, the laws about, you know, where they have to ask us if permission to sell our data. That's a really important law that impacted the US, right? And impacted everybody. Those things are important. So that's another way to contribute, is to the policy as well.
Definitely. So what do you think AI-enabled customer success will look like in the next 1 to 5 years? We talked a lot about what's happening right now, but what do you think the future is?
In the near future, I think we'll just see more companies start to incorporate AI in some fashion and try to differentiate themselves. As we get further along, it'll become table stakes, not just for CS tools, for every tool out there, to incorporate it in some way. I think it will make coding easier in some ways, because you can say, I want code that will let me accomplish the following things, and then it can build that, right? Like, you won't have to go and be a coder, you know, to build things. So I think in some ways we might see more entrepreneurs for smaller things. Like, for the more complex tools, we will need coders. But that's the thing, is that the critical thinking skills, all of us need to start reading more of the business books, more of the, you know, just sort of fictional books, you know, just more, we should be reading more, because we need to become critical thinkers. Because the way that we're going to be seeing all these tools advance, we as humans need to step up and think about how we're taking things to the next level, how we're going to contribute. So I think we'll see a big change in the tools. And for that, we'll need to step up and make ourselves better as well.
Definitely. I think it'll be an interesting next few years on how AI, ChatGPT, everything kind of contributes, and even our tools today, and how AI is integrated in the tools we use today will look like. But we could keep chatting, Jan, forever and ever about this. But yes. I do want to bring us to the end of the conversation, but also challenge you to our quick fire questions, where I challenge all my guests to answer the next few questions in a sentence or less. Are you ready?
Sure.
Great. The first question is, what do you think is next for the CS industry, other than ChatGPT, because that's what we talked about?
I think customer-led growth and understanding its relationship to product-led growth is where we're going next. And it's how it not only transforms CS, but how it will transform our companies.
Which SaaS product can you not live without as a CS professional?
Yeah, LinkedIn.
Yeah. I was about to say, I was like, you're on there all the time. I would expect that. The next question I have is, what is your favorite CS learning resource?
Books.
Anyone in particular that you're reading or one that you want to call out?
Well, my favorite right now is Britt Andreotta. She's talking about how neuroscience applies to business. And so I quote from her a lot right now. I guess books and communities, how we share our ideas together and help each other.
Awesome. And my last question is, who's inspiring you, or whom do you think we should have next on this podcast?
Have you had Sherry Srebnick on yet?
I have not. No.
Oh. And you know, did you have Ajime Aramisole, or did you have Mike Lee, or did you have Ralphette Murphy English?
No, you are listing so many people I need to talk to.
Yeah. Oh, I have a long list, actually. Yeah. No, there's so many people. Oh, and Cynthia Silva. Yeah, I can go on for days.
Okay. I will have to take you up on all those names, but thank you so much for sharing all of them. I really appreciate it. And I really appreciate having you on the podcast as well. If any of our listeners have any other questions or want to get in touch, what's the best way to reach you?
LinkedIn.
Awesome. I'll make sure to link you down in the show notes. Thank you so much, Jan, for your time and sharing all your knowledge and your geekiness with us on the topic of AI. I really appreciated it. Thank you for listening to the Customer Success Channel podcast today. We hope you learned something new to take back to your team and your company. If you found value in our podcast, please make sure to give us a positive review and make sure you subscribe to our channel as we release new podcasts every month. Also, if you have any topics that you would like me to discuss in the future, or you would like to be a guest on the podcast, please feel free to reach out. All my contact details are in the show notes. Thanks again for listening, and tune in next time for more on customer success.